Welcome to Highway Diary.
I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. Let me just check the levels real quick. I think that'll be good. With me is... Let me just also check that it's rolling. It's rolling.
With me is the Secretary of the Los Angeles comedy scene, the Secretary of State, Jay Kroger.
Hey. Is that a new title that I'm not aware of?
I think so. I think that you're the official... We have the Roastmaster General, so Jeffrey Ross takes care of the military aspect of the Los Angeles comedy scene. Who's the president? If you were going to nominate a president...
A president of the comedy scene?
Chris D'Elia?
No.
Aziz Ansari?
Well, not anymore. I mean, I don't think I would nominate him in general, but, like, it seems he has trouble to deal with.
We're going to talk about that later, because I have a lot of things to say about that particular incident that just broke.
Right.
Let's be serious. The comedy scene, you know, I lived here 3 years ago. I just moved back.
Right.
You were on my podcast maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I was a little rude to you on that podcast. When you start telling me about how you don't drink, you don't smoke, you don't get women, I was like, what is going on with this guy? I couldn't wrap my head around it.
Sure.
But we were at an open mic maybe 2 months ago. I was doing a podcast with Johnny Ansari, and I saw you perform, I think maybe for the first time.
Interesting.
And you talk about your... that you've never had a drink of alcohol, that you're...
That's not entirely... I do drink. It's just that so many comics drink so much that me drinking, like, one drink sometimes...
Right.
...equates to not drinking.
But you're also, like, very celibate, you know?
I mean,
you're living the life of a nun.
I mean, it's not for any religious reasons, so let's not put, like, a nun on it. I mean, certainly I would like to, at some point, engage in sexual congress, if we want to, like, say it like that. I just haven't gotten around to it.
The pursuit.
Yeah, and also I would add, it's not, like, a huge priority of mine.
Yeah.
It's not, I feel like there are a lot of guys, and, you know, perhaps a lot of them, it's not even their fault, that is just... the central driver of all their decisions of, like, all the things that I'm going to do today, is that going to somehow lead to me getting laid at some point when I'm just more focused on career things?
Right.
And also, I would add that I am not a person that is interested in, like, one-night stands or, like, drunken hookups. Like, I've had chances... but I was not into the girl, and there have been other times where, like, she gets, like, really touchy-feely, but she's also very clearly intoxicated, and I'm not comfortable in this situation.
But she just wants to feel the thread count of that. Look at this silk shirt you have on.
It's not silk. It's cotton.
The best dressed man in the Los Angeles comedy scene.
Oh, thank you.
In New Orleans, the best dressed man, I will go on record, I have been on record, Terry Scott. There's this guy, he's got alligator boots.
Cool.
He's got snakeskin belts
his wardrobe
is worth more money than I'll ever see in my entire life. So I'm very jealous of your clothes.
Oh, thanks.
Let's change the subject to a serious topic. Nerd Melt.
Right.
Meltdown.
Right.
Had a financial meltdown.
Uh-huh.
They collapsed.
What do you mean?
Aren't they closing?
No.
Nerd Melt?
No.
No?
If you go to the Nerd Melt calendar right now, they got a full schedule for this month.
Okay, I fucked up. What did I hear about that?
You know, every few years, somebody says something about, like, oh, is the people who own the property in that block, are they going to, like...
Renew the lease,
or they're going to sell, the property underneath everybody, but then nothing happens.
So I read an article that seemed like it was closing down, you know?
Well, you can go watch shows 7 nights a week this week.
That's why I go to the Comedy Bureau, because you have all the updated information.
Yeah.
I remember during the holidays, you know, this town gets pretty flaky. Uh-huh. Right?
Sure. I mean, where people go home.
If they tell you, hey, every Wednesday we're doing this open mic
right.
from 6 p.m. to 9:30 p.m.
Right.
So if someone puts in their GPS and drives 90 minutes to come to that open mic, right. it's going to be there.
Right.
Oh, well, the day at, not the day after the day after Christmas.
Right.
Oh, not new. Well, Wednesday's a new year. Well, obviously we're not doing it now.
Uh-huh.
You got to chase these people down.
I do have to chase these people
down. Can you describe what I'm talking about?
Me, I mean, like, you know, during the holidays, people who run open mics, they often take the weeks off. As I, it's understandable, like, they're going home. But I would say probably more often than not, I have to go check in on people to see if, like, they're going to run the mic that week.
Yeah.
Just to have, like, a reliable source of information. Because I don't want people going to mics that aren't happening. And certainly, if there's a place for people to go that are still in town and want to perform, or they just want to get some holiday frustration out, I want them to have a place to go.
Right.
And so I have to, like, have to individually check with people. If their mics are going.
And you even wrote on Facebook, you were like, I don't care about the fucking holidays. I only care about work. Email me back if you're doing your fucking mics. Sometimes you gotta round up these cats.
Yeah. I mean, you know, comics aren't comics for, like, being incredibly organized and reliable. Certainly that's, like, a plus if you are, but yeah, there's a lot of people, you know, there were people that that, like, just assumed that they actually had their mics running, and I had emailed them, like, over the holidays. I had emailed them, they didn't get back to me, and then they're like, why'd you take my mic off? Like, you didn't email me back.
Right.
So I'm just gonna assume that it's not happening.
Right.
And also, like, you know, there are people who, I mean, this is so niche and inside baseball about open mics, but I, am not going to check your Facebook profile or your Twitter account or your Instagram every week to see if a mic is happening, because there's literally hundreds of mics I keep track of. And I don't want to do that.
Right, right.
They
got to get to you. You're going to have
I'm
the source.
I'm not even... I am providing a service, I think, I feel, and I hope this doesn't sound like it's too much for people, I feel like the least that you can do is just tell me when stuff is not happening.
Well, also, does anyone give you a schedule for the whole year? Like, look, this is it. Every Wednesday except this one, this one, this one.
No, I mean, there are people... I generally, when people tell me about a new open mic, I tell them, like, please reach out to me if you change the format or if you take a week off.
Yeah.
And then there are people who are like, oh, I'll never take a week off. I'm like, I mean, you say that, but I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Do you know when the Super Bowl is? I don't know when it is. It may fall on the day of your mic.
Dude, football ruins comedy.
I mean, it would be on a Sunday, but...
I hate football.
You hate football?
Oh, my God.
I mean, football is great in highlights. I can't sit through a four-hour game.
But the thing is, you know, it's just like... It's like the bar has got to make a terrible choice. This is either a fucking comedy show right now, or this is a football game.
Sure.
So they want to keep the people who are watching football in the bar by having the game on.
Right.
Well, at the same time, you're trying to tell your fucking jokes... And now half the room is cheering at
yeah.
When it's like, I just got, you know, last week I got molested by my uncle. Yay!
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Is that part of a bit that happened to you?
No, I'm just telling, I'm okay. just saying the potential problem.
Sure.
People are cheering at the wrong time.
Right.
It's going to set the vibe all of the fucking
well,
room
that's,
all off.
Ideally, if you're doing a show or an open mic or a comedy event at a bar...
Yeah.
Ideally, there would be a back room that is separated from the bar.
Right.
Therefore, people who want to deal with, just want to, like, drink or they want to watch the game or whatever, they can do that. And people who want to be part of the comedy, they can be part of that. But,
well, I don't think I'm going back to Schoonerville until they make that choice.
Okay, so you were talking about an experience.
I don't want to name names, but I'm just saying.
I mean, you just did.
There's a choice. There's a choice that the bar has to make.
Uh-huh.
Is this football time or is this comedy time? And you can't have both things going on at the same time.
Sure.
But I like those people over there, but that is just... So let's talk about formats.
Uh-huh.
Now, what you mean by that is whoever comes to the show might just put their name in a bucket, and then the bucket is drawn like Hooters works like this. Right. Me and Dan Nolan actually did a podcast at Hooters, but it was kind of annoying because, you know, well, I don't want to talk shit on it. It's a good mic, but the bucket is brutal because, you know, we put our names in at 8, and we're sitting around till 10:30 going, they didn't pull either of our names. And right. for 3 minutes each, they have like 600 names in the fucking thing.
Sure.
So we're just like, yeah, fuck this mic. Let's just go do the podcast downstairs, you know?
Right, right.
So sometimes it's like a cost-benefit analysis of how much time it's going to take. You know?
Yeah, it is. I mean, so that is one way of running a mic, which is
called... What are other formats?
That's a rolling lottery.
Mm-hmm.
There's another form of a lottery where you put your name in a bucket, but all the names get pulled at the top of the show. And so then you just sign up, and then the order's determined. There's first come, first serve, where people just, like, show up whenever they show up before the mic starts. And then, you know, they have a sign-up sheet, and you just take whatever... slot is available.
Yeah, performer. One, yeah, two, yeah. Three, first come, first serve.
Now, I have a personal preference as a performer, and me as a person, a first come, first serve, because I tend to have more of my stuff together than other people. But well, I understand that other people, they like lotteries. There's a certain sense of fairness that comes into it. Depending on who's running the lottery. And, you know, lotteries do tend to, like, have more people stick around.
Right.
But...
In the room, because
In the room, yeah, but then they're all waiting. I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world, but I just, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
I just personally happen to prefer first come, first serve. And I don't know. Like, there's this idea, if you go to LA, New York, like, you need to get the idea that there's, like a mic that's, like, great. I mean, you gotta redefine the word great. Because you'll just have mostly performers watching you. And, I mean, they'll be listening. They're not inhuman. But you just gotta, like, take into account that you're just, like, trying to put... like, thoughts together, or that's what you should be doing anyway. You shouldn't be, like, running a material at an open mic that you know works. You're trying to hear words for the first time. You're trying to see, this thought that I had is racist and not funny. Maybe I shouldn't do that in front of a bang crowd.
Mm.
I'm not really worried with, like, a low-energy mic with, like, a bunch of comics. I just know that's what it is.
You just want to know what it is up front so you can put the Comedy Bureau always be a source of reliable information. And then, you know, if someone is like, hey, man, I drove 2 hours from San Diego to go to the Hollywood Boulevard. There was no parking. Finally, I paid $10 for parking. Then I got in there, and then there was no mic. You know, that's the worst.
Yeah, I want to avoid that happening. So I do... Anytime that does happen with people, that is like somebody didn't tell me that the mic was off.
Right.
Yeah. And because I do my best to like keep things up to date as much as I can.
Even
one person.
You're a one-man band. Go to thecomedybureau.com. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Thecomedybureau.com. There's a Patreon link. You can patronize it.
Oh, thanks, man.
Jake does a excellent service for the scene. He's the secretary of the state of the Los Angeles comedy scene, and that's he takes mouthful. His job very seriously.
Yeah, I do.
Especially with my Jersey accent, it's hard to get that out. You know, I want to talk about your dressing because I've been thinking about it, like how the reward system in your brain operates.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
It's like maybe some guy has, like, a foofy bride, you know, right. and he, like, buys her dresses.
Right.
You know, like Richard Gere in Pretty Woman.
Okay.
You know, just a hooker off the street in jeans and a t-shirt.
Uh-huh.
Then he takes her. This is the part of the movie when women orgasm, you know, he takes her to Macy's.
I'm sorry. I was in here yesterday. You wouldn't wait on me? Oh. You work on commission, right?
And he's like, hey, let's just spend $30,000 on clothes for you.
Women literally are
dun, 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 dun. Boom, doo, doo, doo. Uh-huh. And then she's putting on different dresses. Women are getting all squishy. And then later in the movie, he puts a hamster in his butt.
What theater did you watch?
I'm just saying, pretty okay. You spend all that money on yourself. Uh-huh. You pretty woman yourself to make yourself feel good.
Yeah.
So when you walk into a place, boom, all eyes are on you.
I don't.
Then women get all creepy with you, you know? They start grabbing on
now,
you.
Now, this is the part where that is not true.
All right, cool.
I pretty woman myself, I guess, if you want to say that I have, like, a Richard Gere and
Julia Roberts. You're your own sugar daddy.
Yeah, I mean, I dress for myself because when I look in the mirror and I put an outfit that I like together, it makes me feel good. Now, from then on, I don't really care what anyone thinks. I mean, I appreciate compliments, of course, and I'm not going to stop people from telling me they like the way I dress. But if people don't like it, I don't care. Right. If they want to make fun of me, like I look like whatever they come up in their head, because I, you know, hang out with comics all the time.
Right.
That's fine by me.
Like a Latin cocaine salesman or something.
Sure. That's fine. I know what I did when I walked out of the door today. And I would say that there is a great deal of insecurity when people who, like, you know, they dress. I think there are a lot of people that dress to just blend in. And anytime they want to, like, establish a certain sense of style, true to themselves, whatever that may be, and they don't have to wear, like, a blazer and a hat, or I like when people have their own sense of style, it might be nerve-wracking to even just get noticed. Like, the fact that you would, like, get a new jacket or a new shirt, and somebody might even notice, like, hey, new shirt, that may be nerve-wracking to people. I would just say, if you really do like that shirt, and you like the way you look in that shirt, which I also think is important, like, screw other people, man.
Let your freak flag fly.
Sure.
I'm just trying to, you know, because in my head, a lot of my thing is like we were talking about before. I really do want success with screenwriting.
Right.
Well, here's the other thing. Like, the way we're describing the Los Angeles comedy scene, it's very tough at the open mic level.
Sure.
There's just so much hustling for the little bit of skill building that you got. And when I was living in New Orleans, like, I was doing stand-up 6 nights a week because it was so much easier than it is here.
Right.
Like, I would sign a list, I would know where to go, and get decent stage time, like 7 minutes, 8 minutes here.
Sure.
Like, in front of, like, 50 people sometimes at Siberia. Different rooms are fucking great in New Orleans. I got great stage time.
Right.
Then I moved back here, and I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, I'm waiting at Hooters with Dan Nolan for 2 hours, and we both don't get up, you know?
Right.
You know, so it's like, fuck, I gotta rack up my credentials with screenwriting so that I can go into the improv in Hollywood and get spots, or, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot more just, like, social, political navigating to get those prime time, stage time spots, you know?
I mean, yeah, but also, I think the best strategy is just, like, going up as much as you can, wherever that may be, and, like, trying to be the funniest that you can be whenever you can.
Right.
'Cause there's no really rhyme or reason as to why people get their big break whenever they get their big break. It just kind of, like, happens. And it could happen way late in their career. It could happen way too early. But I think the best that you, like I was saying, if you're ready for a break, meaning that someone gives you an opportunity for, like, a late night spot or a special or something like that, not only can you deliver, but you have plenty of other stuff on deck that you want to do, rather than, like, well, I was just working for 8 years on this hour of stand-up, and that is all that I have creatively to offer. I don't know what to do after that. That is a problem.
Well, I think, you know, it's like if I think too many people are sitting around waiting for Comedy Central to give them a special. And I think, first of all, Comedy Central and Viacom, they're about to die because Netflix, is like, why would you spend $130 a month for cable when you can spend $15 a month for Netflix,
right,
and pretty much, you know, go to YouTube for whatever you need, mm-hmm, from the other shit. Mm-hmm. So I just think that also, if you go with your family to Sears and you're like, I want the photography special. Well, it's going to be this. Like, it's going to be, right, the husband and wife looking, right, off in the distance. Then all the children looking off in the distance. It's going to be the same exact fucking portrait of the same stupid family every single fucking time because they have a format. Mm-hmm. So if you do a Comedy Central special, they're going to rent a venue and they're going to shoot 30 specials in the same shot. You know, maybe over
They've been taping them in New Orleans. Did you go?
No, I didn't. Well, first of all,
I mean, you could have gone.
I could have gone. It was free. And I had ways to do it, but I just didn't want to.
Fair enough.
Because I think that a special, you know, I think you should get $5,000 or $6,000 and go on the road, uh-huh, and just, like, shoot a special guerrilla style that looks like a one-of-a-kind unique piece of art.
Uh-huh. Okay, you got to be a little more specific with that.
Like, yeah.
I mean, generally, you need probably around, like, at least $20,000 to, like, okay, shoot a special. But, like, I mean, if you're doing it like that, I mean, first of all, are you even getting an hour at these spots on the road? Because maybe you are, maybe you aren't. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, the way I wanted to, like, you know, at different levels of your career, you have access to longer and longer pieces of stage time, right?
Sure.
So for your first special, when you're just scrumming it, like, yeah, you get 10 minutes here, you get 20 minutes here. Mm-hmm. Well, then shoot 9 shows and make them into a special.
Right. So, but, I mean, Are you speaking in general, or are you speaking about yourself?
I'm speaking about myself, but I'm also saying maybe it's good to avoid a Comedy Central special. Maybe it's not good to wait around for someone to give you one.
Sure. I think you can generally say that there are people that are waiting, but I do think there are a good deal amount of people who are like, that is just one thing that they're trying for amongst a bunch of other things. While the TV landscape is currently being redefined because of Netflix disrupting the business, Comedy Central and Viacom are still alive, so they're still offering half-hour slots. While it may end up not doing anything for your career because they air it at, like, Friday at midnight, and then they offer, like, a kind of unappealing way to, like, watch it afterwards... it's still, like, a nice thing to have.
I hear you.
Yeah, if you're already, like, so, you know, comedy, whatever discipline of comedy you choose, it's always a very, very long road. And, like, if someone's gonna give you a theater worth of people and cameras to...
But they only give you, like, $10,000. You know, if you shoot your own for $8,000, spend $8,000 instead of collect $10,000. Uh-huh. Right? I just think then you can lease it to Comedy Central and you own the rights to all the jokes. If they shoot yours, they actually own your jokes as well.
Sure.
And so they can put them in, like, The Daily Show, or they can put them in whatever shows they have. Uh-huh. They own your jokes then, too. Mm-hmm. So I just think, like, hey, own your own stuff.
Right.
Lease it to them.
Right.
And then when that lease is up, cool. Okay. Who else wants it? Does Netflix want a run of a window of opportunity where I'm going to lease it to them where they can, you know what I mean? I just think you have more power as an artist and you have more options later.
Sure. I would say there's something to be said with, like, when do you make a special or an album? Like, are people asking for it, you know? I mean, certainly I'm for people doing their own art and releasing it themselves so they can keep the money for themselves. But then, I mean, I don't know, it's a different case with everybody. But when, like, if you're going to go and record something and put it out in the world with the idea that, like, you want to make a living with it, like, how viable is it, you know? Because there are people who I know who have never recorded anything and released it out, And it's like mind-boggling because I know for a fact that people would buy it. And they just haven't ever gotten around to it.
Well, like Bobby Lee. He's never put a special out.
Bobby Lee, I would he's never had an album either?
No. Hmm. But he's done Last Comic Standing. That's the only place where sure. all this shit was filmed.
Right.
You know?
Right. So, yeah. You know, that is a little mind-boggling to me. Like, there's obviously a demand for it.
But then I think in his mind, he's like, well, then I can't tour on the same joke, so...
Then do
like
new jokes.
Yep.
I don't have any sympathy for that, man.
I'm motivated like 84%, like in the back of my head, in a long game. It's like, I got to make all my career moves real careful. Mm-hmm. I have to think real carefully. When do I step away from the easel and give my painting to the merchant to sell in the marketplace? These are all extremely important decisions in the career of a stand-up. Mm-hmm. But in the back of my mind, every decision I make is like, what is going to get me the hottest pussy in the future? You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I was saying earlier.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
So let's talk about Aziz Ansari.
Okay, so that's how you wanted to segue into that?
I'm just saying I relate to things.
Okay, sure.
And obviously...
Well, wait. Okay. I just want to know.
Yeah?
Have you always thought this way?
Have I always thought this way?
In terms of like, all right, everything that I'm doing, I want that to lead to me getting the hottest pussy that I can.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. And how has that worked out for you?
Well, I had two girlfriends in New Orleans. They cool. both cheated on me. You know, not too great as of late.
Right. Now, you say that you've thought this way for as long as you can remember. Right now, like, you know, you thought that way as a teenager as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Even more so.
Yeah. That's understandable.
Well, I think, didn't Freud say that every building is built, like, all men, all they want to do is, like, pump loads all day, right? Mm-hmm. But then society was built on sexual frustration. Like, not one building would be built without someone wanting, having a fucking
then
load to shoot.
Like, well, I just don't. I mean, and I can only speak for myself, but none of what I do comes from any sexual frustration whatsoever. So.
It's just I wanted to get your hormones checked. But anyway, let's talk about Aziz Ansari. He's a hot-blooded man.
Sure.
I used to know this guy a little bit. I started at the UCB in New York City when there was only one theater on 26th and 8th.
Yeah, in Chelsea.
In Chelsea. And that's where I did stand up first probably like 12 times or 20 times
right.
by commuting into New York. And then once I saw my first UCB show and they said they teach classes, mm-hmm. then all through my undergrad, I was obsessed with it.
Right.
And that's when this guy was around and he was always very nice. I would see him at McManus sometimes, which is a bar that they would always hang out at. McManus, somewhere on 14th. Mm-hmm. I forget exactly where, maybe 14th and 8th or something. 14 and 9. I met Jack McBrayer there. He was a sweetheart. I met Aziz there a few times. And I would just see him around the UCB, and he was always very nice, and he always had a smile on his face. That's mm-hmm. the extent of my experience with him.
Sure.
I just get a good vibe. But then I read an article. This past weekend. Yesterday morning. And I read the whole article. Mm-hmm. And then I read...
Wait, what was the article about?
It was about... Aziz, well, the headline was terrible. Sure. Aziz charged with sexual misconduct.
Right.
Well, that sounds bad.
Yeah.
So where is he on the set somewhere and he's just grabbing titties? What's going on?
Uh-huh.
So then you got to read the article, right?
Yep.
So he picked up this lady.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
He took her out to dinner.
Uh-huh.
And he took her up and then he was like, hey, let's go to my house. And she was like, sure.
Right.
Okay, now she's talking to a celebrity
uh-huh.
who's got a beautiful apartment, I'm sure, in New York mm-hmm. City. She comes upstairs,
mm-hmm.
and then they're kissing. Then I guess he puts his fingers in her mouth.
Uh-huh.
Not the most subtle move, but he's sure. going like, hey, what if something else was in your mouth?
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Then he kind of like pointed to his penis. He was like, oh.
Uh-huh.
Oh. And then she was like, and then she said in a text message to him later, you ignored my nonverbal clues to slow down.
Verbal and nonverbal cues.
No, she just nonverbal.
Okay. All right, I'm just going off of the article I read.
Meet verbal and nonverbal.
Yeah.
I would say no. I would say the way it was written uh-huh. was nonverbal cues.
Okay.
What is that? What is a nonverbal cue?
You're asking the wrong guy.
You know what a nonverbal thing is? Sucking someone's dick. Uh-huh. That's like a nonverbal thing that she did.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So then they get cuddly and they start watching Seinfeld.
Uh-huh.
So then later, I guess she goes home. And I have the article here. Let me pull up this text message.
From what website?
Hold on. The one I tweeted. JustJared.com?
Just Jared. All right. Just making sure you got your sources.
Just Jared.
Uh-huh.
He's alone in his mom's basement. But he's got the actual text.
Right.
Oh, shit. Is this not going to work? Oh, fuck. I don't know my Twitter name. Christ. Well, okay. The move he kept doing was taking his two fingers in a V shape and putting them in my mouth.
Right.
In my throat to wet his fingers.
Mm-hmm.
Because the moment he'd stick his fingers in my throat, he'd go straight for my vagina and try to finger me, the woman explained. He said, of course, it's only fun if we're both having fun. That sounds, you know. So he took her on a date.
Right.
I don't know what they're saying because it's not really in the article. Hey, baby, what's going on? Hey. He's getting handsy with her vagina, you know. So then, after he bent me over, I stood up and said no. She said no.
Oh, so they're verbal and not verbal.
I guess verbal, too. I don't think I'm ready to do this. I don't really think I'm going to do this. And he said, how about we just chill, but this time with our clothes on, he said. Then they started... Well, before that, she blew him, okay? So, yeah, he sat back and pointed to his penis and motioned for me to go on down on him.
Right.
And I did.
Mm-hmm.
I think I felt really pressured, and it was literally the most unexpected thing I thought would happen that moment because I told him I was uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. You went on a date with him. I just think, like, I don't know. If you go on a date, I once took a Tinder girl on a date, right?
Uh-huh.
We went to Thai food.
Mm-hmm.
I bought lovely Thai food.
Right.
You know. That's what Uncle Eric does sometimes.
Sure.
When
you bought her Thai. You went on a date.
Yeah.
Having Thai food.
Yeah.
I said now there's nothing inherently wrong in like wanting to have sex.
Right.
But like to think of it transactionally is problematic. Where I don't know. Now I'm being presumptuous since not me. Like buying her Thai food does not mean that you get to have sex.
I understand that.
Yeah, yeah.
I understand that maybe it's a bunch of dates, you get to know each other, oh, then it doesn't work out. Whatever. Right?
I would hope that at some point she likes you.
I was making her laugh the whole time. Uh-huh. It was good vibes. We had a lovely date, a lovely conversation. I don't think she would even remember me, but if she was interviewed right after, I think she would say she had a fun date.
Right.
So I say, hey, you want to go back to my place and smoke some weed and hang out? She goes, yeah, sure.
Uh-huh.
We go back to my place,
uh-huh.
right? I'm like, hey, you want anything to drink? I get her beers,
right?
You know? I'm like, hey, you want to smoke some weed? Blah, blah, blah. So then I just go, you know, after the joint is done, I go, oh, you look really cute. And I went in to kiss her, and she went, whoa.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, oh, you know, I'm just not really feeling like this is a romantic thing.
Yeah.
In my head, I'm going, what in the fuck did you come to my house for?
Maybe to hang out and smoke some weed, man.
You know?
That's...
Are people pretending to not know what's going on?
No, some people... I would say that there's probably differing agendas in this situation.
Right.
Where, I mean, you saw things working out a certain way.
Like the girl's trying to mooch as long as possible.
Mooch, but maybe... Maybe there are women who want to just have companionship and not anything more than that because life is terrible and the world is an awful place. And if you have any connection with anybody on any level, it's just kind of nice to hang out. So maybe that's all that it can be, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe she wasn't looking for anything more than that.
Right.
You know? The very first... You know how I got into stand-up, man? Well, I mean, this wasn't the sole reason, but, like, one of the sort of flashpoints that led me to doing stand-up was I had a crush on this record store manager back when that was, like, a big thing around the country where there were just, like, Sam Goody's and Warehouse Music's everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I would go to this one Warehouse Music where it was in the mall close to my house. I just happened to develop a crush on the day manager. And I would just go and hang out at her work because nobody was, like, buying CDs. People were, like, you know, downloading music off iTunes and shit. So I'd hang out at her job, and I thought she was cute. And at the time, I had started a friend of mine wanted to get into stand-up. I hadn't gotten into stand-up yet. But he is such a lazy piece of shit that I had to drive him to an open mic. I had to find an open mic and then drive him to it because he's so lazy that he, even though he was, like, born and raised in Southern California, he's never gotten a car or learned how to drive.
Right.
So one week came where I was like, and that is, like, the only endeavor he has ever, like, ventured upon where he actually, like, put himself out there creatively as stand-up. So I didn't want him to, like, stop doing that. Or else he would just play video games all day. I one week came where he was like, I don't want to go to the open mic this week. And keep in mind, we're only going to one, as opposed to, like, you should be going to at least five.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't want to go. And I'm like, man, we got to go. What else are we going to do? He's like, I don't want to go. No, we're going. And he then put this ultimatum to me, where he was like, look, I'll go if you go ask this girl at the record store out. Whoa. Now, what a jackass to, like, to demand of me to drive him to a thing that he wants to do, but is just feeling lazy about, on the notion that I will go ask this girl out.
He's like, you're trying to make me better, man? No, I'm going to try to make you better, man. We're both going to face our fears.
Sure.
We're both in this.
I mean, I think that's how he saw it. But he's also still being incredibly lazy. So I took him up on his dare, and I went and asked her out. And I actually went to the store. She was there. I just asked her out to coffee. And I was like, and she just gave me her number. She said, I'd love to. 2 weeks later, we had coffee. It was great. Mm-hmm. We had a lovely long conversation. And we were like, we left that, like, wanting to do karaoke. And then the next day, I got this text message that read, I'm getting this vibe that you're, like, into me. Just so you know, I'm a lesbian, and I'm cool with being friends. Now, I think in 2018, and probably several years before that, but, like, you know, I would have a different answer. But at the time, I was very upset, and what I thought was a romantic endeavor turned out to be not a romantic endeavor. And this lesbian had just, like, you know, sort of led me on, when she probably wasn't. Because she was just like, like, this guy hangs out at the store, and we had a nice coffee, and then that's it. So it probably wasn't a 400-word text message, but that's how I remember it being. I put this super long text message. I sent it, and it basically it just said,
how look, dare you with your lesbo lies? You titillate me. You tantalize me. You harlot bitch. You stole a coffee from me.
I think that's the Alex Jones version of that. No, what I said was, like, I already have feelings for you, and I just don't think I can get rid of those.
Go into friend mode.
Yeah. I just, you know, so I think we should just cut it off. And, I would have chosen much differently now, but, I was really mad about that.
I think that's fair of you to say, actually, no, when I see you.
Uh-huh.
I'm attracted to you. I have feelings for you. Naturally, I can't. I don't think there's anything wrong with going, no, I think
that's fine, but I just am different now, where it's like, well, you know, I enjoyed our connection, and, you know, that she's obviously not into guys, so that is not going to happen. That's fine. But, and so anyways, I, like, from that, I went and, like, wrote a set and went up the very next night and bombed really, really hard. It was really bad.
So this is your low point.
I mean, it's a low point. I don't think it's, like, my lowest point. I have lower points.
But how did that, like, scheduling one open mic from your friend turn into the Comedy Bureau? Like, something profound happened to you
right there.
Right.
So, before that, we had been going to that open mic for pretty much, like, a year. And I had, like, been going up, but I had not done anything comedy, because that had terrified me. I had been doing spoken word poetry. I had been doing Bob Dylan covers, things that I just, like, I had wrote poetry for years, I played guitar for years, so those were two fallbacks. I'm like, well, if I have to perform, because I hate driving down here all the time and not doing anything, I guess I'll do this. And what I found through that year is I really gravitated towards hanging around the comedians. I really just enjoyed their company. And as soon as I, like, went up, I, like, even though that was terrible, and the next several sets were also not great, I found that I hated bombing less than I hated, like, just being at a bunch of shitty film jobs where I'd be, like, a gaffer or a re-recording mixer or running craft service or transpo and dealing with just, like, jaded people who are, I mean, understandably, like, I get why they're angry at the film industry, but, like, you know, you gotta lash out on me, man. So I hated doing that more, and so I just ended up gravitating towards going up at more open mics. And going up at more open mics led me to finding out about, like, all these indie shows, and then finding out about all these indie shows, you just sort of uncover what the scene is between that and mics, and then, like, you know, kind of hanging out at some clubs and going elsewhere around LA. And what I found was that no one was really writing about it in a consistent, reliable way. And yet there was all this great stuff that was happening. So from there I was like, well, wouldn't it be great if somebody just decided to start putting in the work and offering a central source of information for everybody.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I think there would be, and let me say this carefully,
mm-hmm.
there would be no Quincy Jones doing 1,000 mics in a year for 2 years mm-hmm. without the Comedy Bureau.
Has Quincy said that?
No, but I've had Quincy on my podcast a couple times, or three times. And I just don't think it's possible because how do you know? How do you schedule?
Right.
If you can't Google Map, okay, this place is here, this place
is
here.
No, you can't. I'll tell you what it was like before the Comedy Bureau. Is there were a few sites that
like
would...
Like Bodslava?
Well, Bodslava is still around, but, you know, people would dip in and out of doing, like, lists of... And this is just open mics. There was a thing called Chuckle Monkey... Alan Lebeckin was a resource for a while, and they would, you know, they would make these lists for mics, but then after a while it would drop off or they would stop, and because it's a lot of work.
And this guy, you know, right here, he's not chasing pussy. You know, he went on one date with a lesbian, and then he goes, this whole shit's a racket. Obviously this was romantic. Fuck this shit.
I mean...
I'm not doing any more of that pussy chasing. You know what I'm doing? I'm chasing this mic. I'm providing a service. Uh-huh. I'm going to structure my brain where I pretty woman myself.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? I make myself look good.
Sure.
I make myself feel good.
That was...
I put on pretty, pretty scarves
uh-huh.
for me.
Uh-huh.
My time. So that I can call open micers and email them and go, is your shit happening on the fucking holidays, cocksucker? I don't like going out. I don't have any friends. This is what the fuck I do. Maybe y'all are chasing pussy. Maybe y'all are trying to get your Chinese wet or your peeners hard or whatever. That's not what I'm about.
Uh-huh. Wait, is that a new term for a vagina? A Johnny? I've never heard that.
Johnny.
Oh, you said Johnny.
That's what I tried to.
Oh, but then it came out. Johnny. It's
kind of with my Jersey accent.
A wet Johnny. Okay, cool.
But I'm just saying, okay, and this is why I'm bitter also about relationships lately.
Oh, it's really? Like,
yeah, I just got cheated on twice, you know.
I'm sorry.
Where it's like someone goes, okay, I'm your girlfriend. Mm-hmm. I'm your girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And then someone finds them making out with another dude.
Right.
It's like, no, I was only driving you to work every day. I was only putting up with all your bullshit because it was a romantic thing.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Because I thought that I was the only one you were kissing.
Did you really get blindsided?
Oh, my God. Curious. Twice in a row. Hardcore.
I'm so sorry, man.
Listen to episode 160 of Highway Diary, The Meltdown, if you want to know all about my relationships. In that, I interview one of my ex-girlfriends and we talk about the more recent one, but they both cheated on me, right?
Not to make you really, but can you give me a quick breakdown of what she said?
Well, she also told me off mic, but at the scene. So we're like, interview. I'm going, look, I just got cheated on. We had a good relationship a few months back.
Right.
You know, what am I doing wrong?
Right.
You know, and she was like, well, this and that, you know, everything had to have a schedule. I needed someone more spontaneous.
Right. And that's fine. That's valid.
Okay. I was in grad school. You know, I'm doing mics every night. I'm fucking, you know, there was a lot of shit going on where it's like, okay, Uncle Eric's going to see you 2:30 on Monday, period.
Uh-huh.
But Uncle Eric's not going to see you fucking Saturday night, Sunday night, too.
Did you mind that you call you refer to yourself in the third person as Uncle Eric?
I have a niece.
All right.
It is the only title that is real in my life. In the future, how do you see your love life evolving? Do you think after a while, like maybe the Comedy Bureau will fall off when some high heels roll into Jake Kroger's life? What do you think? Are you waiting? And let me just ask you this: are you waiting for a touring career as a comic? Are you waiting for, you know, financial independence, selling screenplays? Like, what is your, I guess, goal for career-wise that would greenlight your ability to open yourself to a romantic pursuit as well?
Okay, this is like a 10-part question.
Yes.
But, okay, so as far as romance goes, I'm open to it. That being said, I'm not very keen on playing the quote-unquote game. Like, I'm not on any apps. I'm not actively, like, seeking out anybody in the sense that, like, I'm gonna go to a bar, even with friends, and, like, the whole goal is to, like, try to pick up somebody. I don't even understand if anybody does that in 2018. It would seem weird. Even though I'm not on the apps, I know that that's how most people meet. But, like, I just, like, that's not a top priority in my mind. Now, if I meet someone and it seems like we click, you know, maybe I'll get their number and then we'll try to go do stuff. But if it doesn't lead to anything beyond, like, whatever, however we met, and I know I'm being vague here, but, like, I go dancing at least once a week. I try to go twice. And I don't go, it's not like anything like salsa or something like that, but I go to places where I like the music that they play, and I go lose myself on the dance floor for like 90 minutes, 2 hours. And I've gotten to meet women that way, and they've given me their number, and I've enjoyed that. A lot of them flake out. That's fine. I don't take it personal. Some, you know, we go to go dancing after that. Now, it hasn't led to anything romantic as of yet. It just has led to more dancing, which I'm totally fine with. But I want to find somebody that's as excited about me as I am excited about them. So I'm not going to chase people too hard unless I feel like I'm also wanted.
Mm.
You know? I think that is a good basis for the start of a relationship. I think if one is chasing the other, you know,
the other has too much power.
I don't like that dynamic.
Whoever cares less has more power.
I want.
Isn't that sad?
I want there to be equal caring.
There's got to be passion. Passion runs the world.
So, I mean, that in that aspect of the question, I'm open to it. It's just that I'm not going to chase anybody. That also frees me up for a lot of time to, like, do what I do. That being said, I do think I, at the very least, have to date somebody that's, like, doing something creative where they would get the schedule. That always, I mean, if you talk to a bunch of comics that date, that's, like, kind of a big sticking point. They're either dating a comedian because they, like, get that they have to be out all the time, or if they're not dating a performer, then they do have a strict, somewhat strict schedule of, like, these nights of the week, or, like, a certain number of nights of the week, like, I gotta stay home. So I like going out 7 nights a week, and I, because of that, I would probably want somebody who is more amenable to that. And, you know,
that, was the coffee date, like, your only date? That wasn't, I mean, a dancing date?
You're talking about the lesbian?
Yeah.
I mean, jeez. I mean, what, like, is that even technically a date if she wasn't looking, if she wasn't looking to have anything romantic happen?
So, have you had a date where one of the, where that was, that box was checked?
Technically, probably not.
What if she walked down the street right now? Uh-huh. Okay. Like, right now, she's walked by that Wells Fargo.
Right.
Holding hands with a dude.
Uh-huh.
Stop. They looked around. They kissed each other. They kept going. Would you be devastated?
Probably 5 years ago. Yeah, maybe, but...
Would you get a little tingle in your belly, a little butterfly? Like, what the hell?
No.
She could have tried my wiener. Oh, gee.
Yeah, well, that's the difference, Eric, is you think about... You think through your wiener. I do not.
Yeah, basically. Pretty much, yeah.
I do not. So I would not be upset. I would actually, at this point in time, be like, well, I'm glad she found somebody. That's cool.
Mm.
You know?
Look, I'm just going to spend money on my clothes. I'm just going to make me look pretty myself.
Feel good for your, yeah.
You're promoting a lot of book shows as well. It's not just the open mic thing.
Right.
There's two...
That's always been the case since the Bureau started, by the
way. Well, I know, but I'm just explaining for people that haven't gone already. This is an interactive show to the comedybureau.com, where you'll see two sections. One is for, like, just shows that are paid, where headliners are, you know, getting paid doing shows, book shows, whatever. You got to pay money to get in.
And not, then, all, the, not all the time.
Well, sometimes there are free shows, but yeah. All the cool, kind of cool between the cracks shows that are happening.
Right.
Even if they're like a pop-up venue or whatever, you keep track of that too.
Yep.
So you're kind of like both a promoter and a source of information, like all in the same website.
Yep.
And I see that also your Facebook feed, you know, you're really promoting. Right. Do you see yourself as a comedy promoter in the future? Or, like, you know, some kind of booker person. You're putting your own shows together sometimes,
too. Sure, yeah.
Like, where is this going? Where's the Comedy Bureau evolving to in 5 years?
In 5 years, I mean, I'd like to just be a more expanded version of what I do now. I don't want to, like, necessarily pigeonhole myself into just being a booker or just a promoter. I like doing all of those things. I also like continuing to do stand-up myself. I like kind of curating. I mean, a big part of what I like doing is curation in terms of this is what I like. It's happening in comedy right now. And here's me telling you about it. I hope you also like it. So doing that in a more expanded regard, meaning, like, I would have this sort of time and resources to go, let's say, to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, which is, for those not aware, is this insane festival that happens every year in the summer in Edinburgh for, like, every day of a month. And literally hundreds of shows are happening all at the same time. I think somebody was telling me a statistic that, like, Edinburgh's population during the festival, like, triples.
Well, that's what happens in New Orleans during Mardi Gras, too.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, my God. They have, like, 340,000 people as a population. Maybe 280, like, real locals, 280,000. But during Mardi Gras, there's, like, 1.4 million people in the city.
Wow.
It's so over capacity. I mean, it's... So, I don't think it's a good time to go.
Right.
I would go during October 15th when it's chill, the weather's perfect.
Right.
You know, there's not there the colleges are in town, it's so it's safer.
Does Mardi Gras make you feel old now?
I was just so broke when I was out there. I'm still broke, but that I also had to like kind of I don't know. I felt like I was never a part of that. Like I couldn't like spend like $180 on Jazz Fest tickets and stuff like this. There was always something going on that I couldn't be a part of.
I feel like during Mardi Gras, can't you just like walk down Bourbon Street for free?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm sure it's not the best because there's a shitload of people.
But then like every drink you want to get is $15, you know, it's just a lot of nonsense. I don't know. I also don't like crowds like that.
Fair enough, fair enough.
I don't like dancing in the street too often unless... I don't know. I was, money was always a problem. But, were you, so let's keep talking about, so you want to go to festivals like for Last Comedy Festival in Montreal, Edinburgh.
Yeah, I mean that, the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. I mean, there's comedy that's happening all over the world. I don't know if people know that. Slowly but surely, Netflix is like, I mean, if you like look through... You can see specials in English from comedians that are from not the U.S., Canada, the U.K., and Australia. There are actually more...
countries.
More countries where they're doing stand-up in different languages, but also in English. And, yeah, I want to, like, just know more, you know?
You want to travel the world doing stand-up.
Maybe travel, like, see, this is like a sort of crossroads I had to come to, and I think I've kind of settled with it, but I know what it takes to do, like, a special for stand-up. I know what it takes to do even an album or late night or do the road, and I don't know if I want to, like, put the work in for that. Like, I enjoy doing stand-up. I'm at a point where I don't think I suck. I'm actually at a point where I enjoy it, where, like, if I'm on a show with a bunch of people that are, like, headliners, it's not, like, ridiculous that I'm on the show. Like, I can hold my own. I like kind of floating in that area. Now, to actually do the road or do an hour special or something like that, stand-up has to be kind of your, like, primary concern, you know? And I just don't have kind of the time to do that right now. Mm. Yeah. And so I'm not doing that. But that being said, I don't want to, like, leave doing stand-up. So I'm still out doing it all the time. I got a show tomorrow.
And what's that show? This will be out by the end of the day today.
Oh, cool. That show is at Flappers at 8 in the main room. I'm just doing a spot on a show in the main room.
Nice. Who's the headliner?
Ron Placone.
Nice.
Yeah.
I don't really know that guy. Do you have vices that we don't know about? Do you play video games?
No.
Gamble?
No.
Are you into scat porn?
No.
Anime?
No.
Like, what is your... Is it music? Do you get consumed with albums?
I mean, I listen to new music a lot, but not in a way that it's like a vice. I mean...
Do you have something that's silly that you put as much time into as the Comedy Bureau, making sure that's updated?
I mean, you know, I probably put a fair amount of time into, like, fashion. But, you know, I was on another podcast a few years ago called the Dork Forest with Jackie Cation, which I very much enjoy.
I've been on that, trying to get back on.
What was your dorkdom?
Oh, improv.
Oh,
I used to do like birthday parties, like my 16th and 15th birthday party. We would do Who's Line.
Oh, wow.
Where, like, some of my friends would be performers, the others would be the audience, and my one friend who looked like Drew Carey was the Drew Carey character, right. And he had no cards, and we just did Who's Line.
Wait, so you reenacted Who's Line?
Yeah, but, like, as improvisers.
Oh, okay.
We didn't do their jokes.
Oh, okay.
We just played the games like they played.
Gotcha. All right. So, wait, were you a Ryan Stiles or a Colin Mochrie?
Oh, I loved all of them. All
right. Interesting. So, my dirtdom was origami.
Ah.
I do origami a lot. I mean, not...
My next one is going to be on codependence, so stay tuned, but okay, go on.
You're a dork about codependence?
Well, we'll see. Maybe I have codependent personality disorder, but we can talk about that later.
All right, fair enough. It's like you go into codex meetings or whatever.
Your dorkdom's origami.
Yeah, that's like a thing that I've been doing since I was a kid, and certainly if you watch a documentary that's very appropriately titled Between the Folds... those people do origami way more intensely than I do. But, certainly, I mean, I can fold a three-headed crane.
What?
Yeah.
What utensil do you use, like, to push the little folds in? Like, do you have, like, a little scalpel type of thing, like a dull scalpel?
My fingers.
What?
Yeah, I don't use any tools. Oftentimes, I use receipt paper.
Could you take a receipt paper and put it in your mouth and then go, and then spit out a dove?
No.
You should just tell people that.
All
right. So what's a three-headed crane? Where did you learn this? From a book? Or
from
did
a
you
book,
have a
yeah.
sensei?
You know, I didn't have any sort of classes or anything like that. There are a few books that I own about origami, and surprisingly, they're very poorly written. I mean, there are illustrations, but a lot of them, when they go from one step to the other... You got to really think about how that even happened. And it's not so easy. But I, you know, it's just like something I was into for a long time. And so it's not that hard for me to, like, get to. But, you know, if you just keep doing it, and there's something very relaxing about doing origami, I find, you know, that in, like, you have to focus on it, but it's very repetitive in a way. Because you are making these creases and... everything has to be so precise and, you know, but you're also like, that's all that you're focusing on a certain level in your brain. So I find that it frees up my head to kind of like float off into other things and kind of relax.
It's a meditation.
Yeah, it's very meditative, man. So, and then you got something pretty at the end, whether it be a crane or a eagle or a turtle or a star.
And it's not going to go turn lesbo on you, you know?
It's fine if it does. I'm not trying to assign sexual identity or a gender to anything that I fault.
What if it wants to be Zim's gendered?
It's cool with me.
Were you religious growing up? Were you Catholic?
No, Protestant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Non-denominational.
Are you still that, or...
I believe there's a God. I believe Jesus is a real person. Now, do I think millions of people have been slaughtered needlessly in the name of Christianity? Yeah.
It's kind of rude.
It is pretty rude. Do I think that none of us know the answers as to what happens after we die? Yup. I don't think anybody... And to profess that you do is kind of ridiculous. I mean, I do see that there's a value in religion and it giving people, like, something to hope for or something to commune over. But I just, like, the part where... people turn that and then start excluding other people is the problem.
Yeah, like only 6,000 people are going to get into heaven, so we have to be like brutal to each other right now.
Right.
To make sure that we're the good little soldier who gets in.
Yeah, or you know, it's that's how can we get rid of that part? Where you're like starting to exclude people because they don't believe to the letter what you believe.
So I've had this guy on my podcast twice called Daniele Bolelli, and he wrote a book called Create Your Own Religion that just kind of says that everyone, if they're a unique person, they should set up their moral system on their own and create their own religion. How much dancing is involved in your religion?
Dancing in my personal religion?
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to, like, ascribe my lifestyle as a religion, I mean, I go dancing once or twice a week.
You just have to just let
it out. I have
to,
yeah. It's also like, it doubles as my form of cardio.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I go running sometimes as well, but dancing's way more fun.
Right.
As a form of cardio.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's expressive.
Yeah.
And also, you know, when your suit starts going, you know, the feathers in your peacock hat start rattling.
I actually take my hat off. I take my jacket off. And I, like... I all set it in a corner and they, you know, because I sweat a lot when I go out dancing, so I don't want to ruin my clothes.
All right. Well, what any tenets of the religion of Jay Kroger? Email him when your mic drops.
Sure. Email. I mean, talk to other people. Listen. You know. And I mean, yeah, not only should you think about other people, I mean, think about just other things. Try to be like, in being self-aware, be less selfless. Does that make sense? Not to sound overly pithy.
Be aware of your surroundings and don't just be led by your wiener. Like, think about things.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to do that, but I understand.
Probably not, no. Not at all.
You know, honestly, I would imagine if you went a week without thinking via your wiener, and I don't know how that would manifest itself, it'd probably be pretty freeing.
Interesting. No, it's just like, you know, recently I sent out a bunch of screenplays to literary agents. I'm, like, really focused on that. So I can, like, turn my libido into, like, work to go, no, this is me actually today. This is me having sex. Because if I sell a screenplay, if I mail this thing off to this talent agent, if I do this and that and then get a meeting at Sony and boom, that will lead to sex.
Yeah.
So right now this task is sex. It's kind of how it is in my head in a weird way.
But why, is that what you want to do?
Yeah.
No, like write a screenplay?
Yeah.
And get a lit agent?
Yeah.
Then it can just be that.
Yeah, but I gotta motivate myself.
Where is
this going?
Yeah.
Look, I'm taking you out on a date. You know.
No, don't.
My apartment.
No, let's go back to this. Like, I would say that if you really wanted to be a writer or a screenwriter, even more specifically, then getting a screenplay sold. We're getting representation. I think that should be in enough in and of itself to motivate you, if you really want to be a screenwriter.
No, I really do.
Okay, there doesn't need to be.
But I have to like put these tricks in my head to go. No, this is that. This is me trying. My wiener is constantly like, "Hey, what about me? What about me?"
I'm
like, "No, don't worry about it. I know what you want. I know what you want, wiener."
See, I think.
So look, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna get a house in Northridge, paid for by this screenplay.
Right.
But first, I gotta send this out to get the deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
this is how I think the patriarchy works against men. In terms
wow.
of
wow,
that's how you are cultured into thinking, because we are all. I mean, how old are you, Eric?
32.
So I'm 30. We're around the same age. So, yeah, I mean, everything that we were raised with, and a bunch of men in decades before us, is, like, overly sexualized and made it in a way where we're supposed to objectify women, and that the idea of you getting laid or trying to get laid is a form of currency in terms of being a man, and that isn't even exclusive to being straight or gay. That's just, like, you being a guy. And the idea that you would not try to do any of that is weird, even though it's valid, you know? And so, because so many guys around you, like, think like that, I think you get brought into that way of thinking, even though, who knows? Maybe that is how you want to be, and that's fine. But also, like, there's, like, a whole world outside of that. I think it's kind of tragic that a lot of guys can't even bring themselves to think of, like, well, things can just be the way they are without the ends being, like, sex. I can just enjoy this for what it is.
I think marriage is a conspiracy. It was made by the Catholic Church to destroy hope in the population. I think that was their aim. It's just the laws are so different in different states, you know? The laws are different. You get divorced in California, and you're like, hey, Your Honor, my wife cheated on me. Oh, that's your personal business. That's your personal business. That's your personal business. In Texas, you're like, my wife cheated on me. I shot everyone. The judge is like, that's about right. Crime of passion. She disgraced your marital bed, killed everybody.
You know?
But you're 30 and you have not had sex, is that right?
No. And that's okay.
Right.
I'm not like proud of it. Like I don't wear like a badge of honor or anything like that. It's not like me abstaining. I just haven't found somebody that I thought was like worth it.
And look, I'm not judging you at all for that. I'm just trying to figure out how your brain works. Cause I'm like, there might be something wrong with my brain.
Uh-huh.
Let me go around and ask people how their brains work so I understand how my brain works. You know what I mean? So I'm just like, how do you, you know, your brain is just set up so much different than mine. Because so I'm like, look, sex is the best thing I've ever done in my life.
Right.
When I was with, you know, the first time I did it, it was with a girlfriend that we were going out for a long time.
How
we both loved each other very much. I was like 17. She was like 18.
Right.
You know what I mean? We were my high school girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my second girlfriend in my life or something, depending on how you count that. Maybe third, but...
How long were you going out for?
When we had sex? Well, probably 6 months.
All right.
We did the prom. You know, she was a senior. I was a junior. We did all that and then blah, blah, blah. But it was like the summer before she went to college, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so when your brain is just pushed into this complete joy state, this unearthly joy state where two people become one, then like when you roll back and then you're paying for your insurance and you're doing whatever in normal life, you're like, that was so earth-shatteringly perfect and amazing that I want to like set it up to where later on that gets to happen again ever. So let me start to think about how that can go down.
Right, but, you know, if you even want to say it like a chemical or biological level, like, so there's this great release of endorphins that happens.
Oh, sure, right.
You can get that through other ways.
Like cocaine.
Cocaine, or for me, I get a great release of endorphins when I go dancing.
Right.
Not to say that I make decisions all surrounded by dancing, but it's just like sex doesn't have to be the only thing where you get this unbelievable state of joy.
No, I think working out too. And I got the shirt on Muay Thai. I really like doing Muay Thai practice.
Cool. Where do you do Muay Thai at?
The Muay Thai Academy of America in North Hollywood on Van Owen Street. Bunch of great guys. I've trying to get back in there, but more often. But yeah, it's very fun. It's very freeing, and it's very meditative when you hit the forms, you hit all the, like, body positions that you're supposed to, and then you can, like, make it into a dance.
Sure.
It's, like, it's just all about foot position, hand position, so, yeah, there's different things that are...
I mean, I'm sure you get a great release out of sparring, whether you do good or bad.
I've gotten the shit... The first time I ever did it, this 14-year-old kid, like, beat the shit out of me when I was, like, 27.
Right.
And he had these bony little shins that dug into my liver. It was humiliating. Mm-hmm. But yeah, then you get better, and then you realize, like, oh, well, I'm leaving these openings. So it's fun.
Yeah. But yeah, that release of adrenaline, oh, I mean, it's a rush.
Yeah.
And so that... I'm just saying, it's not the only thing that can get, like, a release of endorphins, man.
That's true. But it, you know... You know, like... It's a trick. It's like there's, you know, there. It's called, oh, that's a trick for a hooker, you know. It's a trick. Like, you know, it goes yucca, 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 and then like yogurt comes out. I don't want to get too scientific, but it goes yucca, 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 yogurt comes out. And if a girl does that for you, you know, with her vagina or mouth or even her hand or something, it's like, whoa, it puts stars in the back of your head. And just like the endorphins, this weird rush.
Uh-huh.
I have codependent problems. And then I'm like, are you my mommy now? Uh-huh. Do you love me forever? So anyway.
How long have you known that?
maybe a therapist in New Orleans tried to push me into that in that direction of understanding how that works.
Right.
But anyway, this has been another great episode of Highway Diary. I want to thank my guest, Jake Kroger.
Thanks, man.
Very much. We went deep into this podcast. Sure. I tried to, you know, I think last time I did, I was so, like, confused by you that I didn't appreciate what you were. But,
I like doing that to guys. It's usually only guys that ever get confused.
Girls are like, I know, I just am a normal person.
No, girls, they're either that or they're like, wow, look at that. That's great.
Right, right.
Not to toot my own horn too much. Oh,
there's guys out there that are just not just dripping cum everywhere they walk.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That is the case for me.
One more time, the website.
The Comedy Bureau. It's thecomedybureau.com. Bureau is spelled B-U-R-E-A-U. It turns out some people cannot spell bureau. Yeah. At the Comedy Bureau on Twitter, facebook.com/thecomedybureau. The email is thecomedybureau@gmail.com if you want to submit anything for listing or posting consideration. And that's it.
And if you're a hot lady and you're into Jake, you know, he's single. So you can give him a very special present.
If you're into that.
Or it doesn't matter. Maybe you'll be doing origami. Yeah. So bring your pussy around or don't. It doesn't matter.
No, it really doesn't.
This has been another episode of the Highway Motherfucking Diary in the Bag. Thanks to my guest, Jake Kroger. An original, the greatest dressed man in the world.
Well, I don't know if that's true, but thanks.
All right, take care.
First comic has this podcast called the Highway Diary Podcast. Dairy Podcast. I fucked that up already. Guys, give it up for Eric Hollerbeck. Going on Ice House, keep it going for Ray.